I thought I'd talk today about a topic, karma, or karma, if maybe more familiar with the word karma. Karma is just the Sanskrit version of the Pali word kamma, but we're, in the Theravada Buddhism we're used to the Pali language. So if you hear kamma, it means karma. It was the first thing that occurred to me to talk about, actually, but the more I thought about it, I realized it's quite a good thing to talk about for a number of reasons. Firstly, because it's a very central teaching in Buddhism. It's a very important part of the Buddha's teaching. Also because it's quite complex, and there's a lot of misunderstandings. A lot of people have very confused ideas. The word karma itself is it's used in a very kind of confusing number of ways. Because it's come into popular culture, it gets used in ridiculous kind of ways. So often people first hear about the idea of karma, the law of karma, through quite wrong kind of ideas. And even in books on Buddhism, I've read books and been quite amazed by the kind of confusion in them, which is partly also because the teachings of karma, the idea of karma or karma, isn't just unique to Buddhism. So in Hinduism and other religious traditions contemporary to the Buddha, they talked about karma and had quite different ideas about what it meant, what it was, how it worked. So some of these ideas that people have about karma are non-Buddhist ideas or mixtures of both, and a lot of ideas are mixtures of kind of Christian ideas of kind of sin and good and bad mixed in with Buddhist ideas and stuff, so it's quite confusing. Okay, well, so for a start, one of the first things is karma, what it means. So karma, it means literally, it means action or work in its most basic sense. Karma means what you do. So this is one confusion that arises. Maybe it's a fairly relatively trivial misunderstanding, but it can lead to more... greater misunderstandings because of the way people use the word. So karma is what we do. It doesn't mean the results of what we do. So it's often used, people often use it to mean, and even people who know better actually use it in this sense, as to be the results of what we get. So if, someone slams a door or something and could have knocked something off the shelf and it kind of, you know, lands on the head or something, someone says, instant karma. Referring to the idea that what you did immediately came back to you. Your bad deed came back to you. But what happens to you as a result of what you do isn't karma. That's what you do is karma. The result is the result. So in Pali, the words used are either like vipaka, meaning result, or pala, meaning the fruit, because that's an image of an image of that's used to describe karma is the idea of the seed. You plant a seed and you get the fruit from the seed. So the fruit or the result. And the important thing about that image of the seed is that depending upon the type of seed you plant, the kind of fruit you get back will differ. And this is to do with the law of karma. So again, so karma is one thing. Karma is what we do. So, and the law of karma is to do with how what we do affects what happens to us in the future. So to be more precise, though, about karma, it's not just anything we do. It's anything we do with intention. So when we do things intentionally, then we're making karma. We're making good or bad karma, or mixed karma. So if you do something completely unintentionally, so you let a door swing and it hits someone in the face, but you didn't mean to do that, then you haven't kind of made bad karma by kind of, though they may well be annoyed with you, but that's not something you meant to do. or if you, you're driving the car and you're running over insects and insects are being killed on the windscreen, you're not responsible for the deaths of those insects. Because you didn't, unless you actually got in your car specifically to kill insects. But then there are easier ways to go about that than driving a car around. Unless perhaps you're thinking I can also add the global warming at the same time, kill two birds with one stone. So if you're just doing things, just walking around doing this and that, and unintentional consequences arise, then it's not bad karma as such. So karma is just what we do, but the important thing about karma, the reason it's part of the Buddha's teachings, is the law of causation about it, is that, put very simply, if you do good, then you get good results, you get happiness as a result. If you do bad, then you suffer as a result. And then that kind of raises the question, so what is good and bad? You know, what do we mean by good and bad? Which is kind of a big question in itself. But in terms of karma, our acts, good and bad, in a way, there's a kind of circular answer to that. You know, good and bad, you know, good things are things which, if you do them, you get happy results. And if you bad things are things which, if you do them, you get unhappy results. Which is a kind of circular definition, but there's a bit more to the Buddha give a bit more kind of more of a clue than that. So this is another important thing to understand, that the law of karma, we talk about good and bad, these are the words we use in English language. Again, the Buddha used the words kusala and akusala, which in the basic meaning means to do with being intelligent or skillful, but also have a broader meaning of kind of good and bad. And some things which are considered kusala, you know, or especially let's say akusala, unskillful, wouldn't be considered bad. So to say that something is akusala, you know, bad karma, bad karma is not a very good phrase, because it wouldn't be, you know, a lot of the things which are unwholesome or akusala, unskillful, aren't bad karma in the ordinary sense. So, for instance, attachment, just to be attached to things, you wouldn't say someone's bad or they've done wrong, you know, if they're a bit, they cling a bit too much to something, or if they're a bit attached to their comforts, or even attached to loved ones. You know, this is seen even as something good. But it's nonetheless, because of the way things work out, the law of cause and effect, these things can actually be unskillful. If we're too attached to, say, our worldly possessions, you know, if you're really attached to some fancy gadget you have, then when it breaks, you get upset. And if we're attached to our health, then when you get ill, you get upset and you suffer a lot more than you need to do. So rather than asking what is good and bad, the question is really, what is skillful? What is useful to do? What's the best thing? How's the best way to behave? And that's a slightly different question, really, because it doesn't have this kind of moralizing idea. And this is another kind of misunderstanding people have. The law of karma isn't, because it kind of takes the place of what would be in, say, Christianity, for instance, you know, kind of God's will or kind of the commandments, or, yeah, this is good, this is bad, good and evil. There's not this kind of good and evil idea. We've got the idea of karma in Buddhism, but it doesn't actually mean quite the same things, and it doesn't overlap in exactly the same ways. So things which in Buddhism would be considered just bad karma aren't things which would necessarily be considered evil, and vice versa. So the question really is, well, how should we act? What's skillful? What's the best way to act? And obviously, the best, most people would agree, that whatever brings you happiness is what you, you know, how should we behave? Well, whatever brings happiness. But rather than just saying that, which, you know, sometimes Buddha would just say, you know, if it leads to happy results, to happiness, then that's skillful. If it doesn't lead to unhappiness, then it's skillful. If it does lead to unhappiness, then it is, by definition, unskillful. It's unwholesome. It's a foolish thing to do. But he explained it a bit more than that and said, if the intention is rooted in greed, hatred, or delusion, then it's unskillful. So this is the other aspect of which Kamma, which I didn't mention. It's not simply what we, well, I did mention, but I didn't make, go into it. Because it's intentional actions that make Kamma, the reason that's so important as opposed to just unintentional things we do is because it's actually the nature of the intentions which is actually the important thing. The intention in the mind. So much so that even if you don't act physically or verbally on an intention, just to have the intention is itself karma. You're making karma if you have an intention. You might have a thought, but you know, without the intention. But the actual any greedy, hateful, or delusional intention is itself karma. And the Buddha actually said that mental acts are more important really than physical or verbal acts. Because everything springs from the mind. The mind is so important. It's central in Buddhist teaching. It's all about the mind, really. And because everything we do springs from our mind and springs from our intentions, everything we do intentionally, anyway. So the nature of those intentions is what's really crucial. So unskillful things are things which we do motivated by greed. So greed, desire, anything, just, you know, to the wanting kind of mind can be very mild or very strong. Aversion, and again, that can be very mild aversion. So even to irritation say the temperature is not warm enough, so you're uncomfortable, and a kind of slight aversion arises in the mind. That is the aversion that arises in the mind and the kind of irritation. You wouldn't think of that as bad or sinful, but in terms of what it does to our mind, if we let our mind get carried away with irritated thoughts, then that's kind of unskillful for the simple reason that we tend to suffer. So you might notice that I was in the car coming here. There were some flies in the car, and I kind of noticed them, and then one kind of flew in my ear, and it's kind of annoying. It's irritating. So even just to being irritated, it's very fast. The mind works very fast, but you know that's not particularly skillful. To get carried away with it, to become obsessed with this fly buzzing around, would be kind of ridiculous. But and also, you know, would mean you have a miserable journey, you know, kind of all the way. So you can see how even something fairly mild, it's not bad. You wouldn't consider it wrong. You know, that was a bad thing to do there to get annoyed at that fly. But it just leaves you suffering. And so because of that, that's the definition of unskillful behaviour. In that case, just mental behaviour. So you can see from that kind of example that unskillful doesn't necessarily mean bad in the normal sense. And it's quite important because of a lot of the other teachings around karma. So it's important to bear that in mind. And I'll mention some of the other kind of misconceptions people can get. And the last, delusional, is anything to do with ignorance or delusion, but specifically delusion to do with the kind of nature of the world in terms of the Buddhist teachings. So anything motivated by these things is unskillful and should be avoided. So that's the kind of like the clue the Buddha's saying, like, what's unskillful? Well, these three things are. But he also just describes it in terms of if it leads to suffering, then it's unskillful. So see for yourself. See, an important thing about aspect of all the Buddhist teachings is always just see for yourself. So if you find behaving in a certain way leads to you to suffer, then stop behaving like that, basically. But rather than just looking at the surface, some people will say, okay, well, when I... when I'm generous, I always regret it and kind of feel bad about it. But when I'm really greedy and keep everything to myself, I feel really good. So the person might think, well, therefore it's good to be greedy. But then, the Buddha's answer to that would be, well, perhaps you haven't really looked deeply enough. You need to look a bit deeper. So this is why the Buddha gives a bit more clues, rather than just say to everyone, well, just see for yourself. he gives some clues. So like, well, if you actually look closely, you'll find that that greedy kind of nature means that you tend to be more greedy in the future. You tend to cling. You tend to cover other things more. Basically, you tend to be miserable. Actually, greedy people are miserable. Yeah, with a bit of wisdom, you see this kind of thing. So it's important to investigate, but we don't just kind of just stop there. So, and some people, they want just kind of simple guidelines and rules. So the Buddha, as well as giving advice on, see what happens, learn from your mistakes, as well as that, he gave advice. So that there are the five precepts. They're not commandments, but the Buddha would say, well, if you keep these precepts of not killing, stealing, lying, sexual misconduct, and taking drugs, then you'll be happy. And if you do those things, then you'll lead to unhappiness. Investigate it for yourself. But if you can't be bothered to investigate it, then it's just, well, just take my word for it. You know, and some people are like that. They just say, tell me what to do. You know, they'll go to the Buddha, tell me what to do, and we'll do this, and you'll be happy. But this idea of cause and effect is important, because karma itself, the law of karma is, if you do good, good and good being, skillful behavior, not motivated by greed, motivated by relinquishment, generosity, motivated by loving kindness, and motivated by wisdom. Things you do motivated by these things, by these wholesome roots, will lead to your happiness. The converse, unwholesome leads to unhappiness. And it's a law of cause and effect. It's not to do with judgment, punishment. You know, if you're good, you get rewarded. If you're bad, you get punished. So this is another kind of misunderstanding. Karma is simply a law of nature. The Buddha says, this is the way things work. Just like any a law of nature, like gravity, law of gravity says anything, any two objects attract each other with a force, you know, proportional to their masses and inversely proportional to the distance. Well, actually, there's a law which Newton laid, kind of discovered this law or postulated it and said this is how things work. It's not a matter of believing in it or not. It's not a matter of that he invented the law and he invented gravity. Just that he said, look, this is how things work. And then people kind of experiment and say, well, actually, that is more or less how things work. And as to why, even now, no one can really say why, actually. It's just, well, that's just the way things are. Things attract each other. Things clump together. That's gravity. So as for why does karma work like this, it's just the way it works. You can see it in a bit more detail. If you know more about the mind, if you look at your mind, you can see how harsh words affect your own mind. You can see how if I'm angry or if I'm rude to other people, it comes back to me partly simply because when I behave like that, it's doing something to my own mind. And even if the other person, even if they don't even hear what I said, it's already affected me. So, you can see kind of a bit more detail of the workings, but they get very, very subtle and very complex. What the Buddha said is that, but actually this is just the way things work. There is this kind of causation in the universe that if you behave in these kind of ways, they are, skillful things are by their nature, of this nature, that they will lead to happiness in the long run. And because it's a law of nature, it doesn't matter whether you believe in it. You don't have to believe in gravity to hurt yourself if you fall over. You don't. The idea that there's a kind of idea in the modern world, in the West, that good and bad, these are socially conditioned things. It's what some societies think is good and other societies think is bad. They're just constructs. There is no real good and bad. It's just what you decide, how you decide to behave. And we make agreements amongst ourselves to behave in certain ways just to stop society falling apart. In sense of good and bad, maybe to a certain degree this is true, but the idea of kusala and akusala, skillful and unskillful, the Buddha said, these are absolute. This is just the law of nature. This is the way things work. Whether, you can all agree, you can live in a society where everyone agrees, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. If someone does bad, then you do the same thing back to them, and that's the way it works. And so they may agree that that's what works, and that's the way they do things. But the Buddha said, as you know, obviously the quote's from Jesus, and he said the same thing. He said, well, actually, no, that isn't good. You may believe that, but nonetheless, if you do that, if you retaliate and take revenge, you'll suffer, because that's motivated by hatred. So it doesn't matter whether you believe it or not, whether your society, whether your religion tells you it's right, whether it's wrong. If you do things motivated by anger, then you will suffer. And the Buddha didn't invent this. The Buddha didn't lay it down as a law. It's just the way things work. So to understand that it's a natural process, but also that it's not a matter of reward and punishment either, which is why some things which some of the workings of karma seem almost, people say, well, this is terribly unfair. You know, why is it like this? This is unfair. And although, broadly speaking, it's kind of fair. You know, if you're good to other people, you get good results. If you're bad, you'll get bad results. But some things, it's like, it's not particularly bad, but nonetheless you'll suffer because of it. Like I said, like attachment. If you're attached to your loved ones, we tend to be attached to our loved ones. There's love and there's attachment. They're not the same thing. But they tend to go together. So, you know, your mother and father, your wife, children, we love them, and we're terribly attached to them too. And because we're attached to them, then when things change, if they become ill, or if they stop loving us, or they die, then we suffer a lot. And the suffering is because of the attachment. And that may not seem terribly fair, because being attached to your loved ones may not seem like an awful thing. It's not evil, it's not bad, it's not what you think of as bad karma. That was bad karma you did there. But it's just the nature of things. If you're attached, you suffer. So this helps explain why some of the teachings can seem, or some kind of misunderstandings of the teachings actually, but can seem a bit harsh. So one thing which is a common, it's actually a misconception, a misunderstanding of the Buddha's teachings, but it's close enough to the truth. There's the idea that, and many Buddhists believe this, and again, I don't know if I've read this in Buddhist books, certainly many Buddhists believe it, that anything that happens to you, people say, that's your karma, yeah, meaning that's the results of your karma, results of your actions in the past. So if you... you know, if you're in a car crash and you die at the age of 20, well, must have made some bad karma in the past. Or if you know, something bad happens to you, or if ants eat you, you know, the termites eat your house, well, you probably destroyed an ant's nest in the past or something, and that's what happened. So this idea that anything bad that happens to you is because of actions you've done in the past is actually a common misunderstanding, but it's directly against what the Buddha said. This is the understanding of some of the other teachers who taught about karma, that everything that happens to you is because of your karma. But the Buddha said, no, it's not the way it is. That kind of thinking actually just leads to kind of to becoming kind of apathetic and like, well, what's the point? You know, it's everything's happening to me because of what happened in the past anyway. It's kind of hopeless. So it isn't like that. Some things just happen because of nature, other laws of physics, basically. There's a gravity. I mean, you fall off a building, you know, you fall off the fourth floor. When you land, your bones get broken because of the law of gravity, not because of the law of karma. You might say, okay, well, why did you fall off? Yeah, but maybe it's simply because you weren't looking where you were going. So, if the weather's bad, take something like the tsunami. As you heard a lot of ridiculous kind of statements about the tsunami. And including, you know, statements from Buddhists, usually kind of Hollywood Buddhists, that like, oh, that was like group karma, you know, for all the people in Indonesia and Thailand. So they must have made bad group karma, that's why all these people drown. This idea of group karma, there's no such thing in the Buddha's teachings. It's more reasonable to explain the tsunami in terms of plate tectonics. You know, the tsunami happened because of an earthquake and all this water rushed up and people drowned people. It affected everybody who was there. everybody, good people, bad people, animals, the birds, the trees died, they didn't make bad karma. It's just, this is just a natural thing. These things happen in the world. Because we live on this planet, which has shifting plates and magma underneath and so forth, earthquakes happen occasionally, hurricanes happen, illness happens. Suppose someone dies at the age of 120. Do you say, well, that was their bad karma? Yeah. I mean, you've got to die sometime. You know. They died because the body wore out. You know, if you die at the age of 60, was that because of the bad karma? Now, it may be, but it's not necessarily so. This is an important thing. So when the Buddha says, and he does say this kind of thing, he says, the cause for short life is if in this life you are cruel and vicious and hurt animals and other people, then in the future you will suffer because of this. You'll suffer in the present life. You'll suffer in a future life. You may be reborn in an unpleasant state. Or if you are born as a human, then you'll have a short life. But it doesn't necessarily work the other way. It doesn't mean that if you have a short life, it's because of killing things in the past. So this is a common misunderstanding, the cause and effect. It's sufficient. The Buddha said anything we do, any intentional actions we do, good or bad, they will have results. So if you're bad, if you do cruel, hateful, greedy, deluded things, then you will suffer because of it in the future, sooner or later. But that doesn't mean that everything that happens to us is because of what we've done in the past. So that's an important kind of thing to realize. And it's misunderstood by a lot of people. Traditional Buddhist countries, people tend to believe that, I think. And also a lot of Western Buddhists too. So one teacher, so I remember I read about this, it was in a children's textbook on Buddhism actually. I heard about it, but obviously made news in England at the time. Glenn Hoddle used to be, I think he was the manager of the football team, the England football team, and I didn't know about it at the time, but apparently he made some statement that about handicapped people they're born handicapped because of their past karma, which is, now according to the Buddhist teachings, actually in some cases that may be true. You can be born, you can be short-lived, you can have illness, you can be born with handicapped, limbs missing or whatever, because of bad karma. But it doesn't necessarily follow that it's always the case. But he said this and there was outrage and everything. He got sacked, which I thought was quite sad because it was just his beliefs, though they may have been a bit confused. But this is one of the other kind of misunderstandings. That seems particularly objectionable to many people. Many Westerners, this idea. In Thailand, for instance, that's just taken for granted. It's their karma. Yeah. They don't find that objectionable. But there's part of the reason many people find this objectionable, I think, is because they're mixing two ideas. They're mixing a Christian idea of sin with the Buddhist idea of karma, and plus the misunderstanding that everything that happens to you is necessarily because of your karma. But even in the cases where it is, bad karma doesn't mean sin. So, like with the example of, say, attachment, if you're attached to your loved ones, you'll suffer. It doesn't mean you're making bad karma in the sense that you're not sinning, but nonetheless, suffering will follow because of that. So, the idea that these people are sinners is a mixture of two different kind of ideas there. Also, the idea that because you do a bad action, that you are a bad person. This isn't the way it is. Because we all do bad things. We all do bad actions. All of us, in the past, in our past lives, have a almost limitless store of all the things we've done in the past which haven't yet come to fruition. And for all of us, that's good things and bad things, and things which were a mixture. Things which where you did things with a mixture of, where the intentions were mixed, good and bad. So, if in this life you're attractive, wealthy, popular, healthy, and so on and so forth, that may well be because of good things you did in the past. But it may well be that in the next life you'll be miserable, poor, you could have unwell and so on and so forth because of some other karma you've done. So it's not that you are good or you are bad. It's just the things we do are good or bad, skillful or unskillful, and they'll have the results that come from them. So to label someone as a sinner or is good or bad, it isn't the way it works. It's not how we see things in Buddhism. So it's just what you do. These things lead to these results. Again, it's just a law. It's not a judgment, and it's not punishment either. So, an example. I mean, this isn't from the Buddhist teaching. This is from a case history of somebody who, a young child who claimed to remember a previous life. And there's people in America and elsewhere who study these children who, from the age of 4 or 5, as soon as they can begin to speak, actually, so younger than that, start talking about previous lives. And it's surprisingly common, actually. They've realized over the last 20, 30 years that actually far more people than we imagine do remember. People often say, well, if rebirth's true, why don't people remember their past lives? And I always just think, well, people just forget. Why don't you remember when you're 1 year old? You know, people tend to forget their earliest couple of years by the time they're 7. But it seems that it's actually more common than we realized. Anyway, but this particular example was a young boy who was, I think it was a boy, born with various deformities and these marks on its legs. And one day, he was cuddling his mother, and he started saying about how in his last life, and describing the life of this man who had been quite wealthy, but a bit of a miser and a bit of a recluse. I may be misrepresenting. I can't remember the details of the story very much, but basically this person had lived on their own, and they had quite a bit of money which they had hoarded away in their house. And this is the story this child was recounting, and it said that then just a bunch of thugs basically, came around to the house one day, tied this guy up using wire, tied him up and demanded to know where the money was, which he wouldn't tell them. But they searched the house and they found the money and made off, left him tied up. And he was tied with wire and blood was dripping from his fingers, and they were in a bent over position. And couldn't get up from this position. All they could do was lie bent over with all these wires cutting into them, and they're watching where the blood was dripping onto his feet, and the blood eventually dried onto his feet, and so the feet were kind of stuck together. And then after about 2 days of just being stuck there, they could have died eventually of thirst, and then felt kind of miserable and wandered around in a kind of in between state for a while until the child saw this woman and was attracted to her, kind of followed her. And then next thing you is reborn as the woman's child. And the thing is that this child was born with various deformities, which, so he claimed, just matched these things that happened just before it died. So it had two of the feet, the toes were joined together, were kind of fused, like webbed together, and there were all these marks on the arm. And it said these marks are from where they put the wires in. And the feet being joined together was where I was looking down, and the blood was all stuck together. My toes were stuck together. So I don't actually know if that's, of course I can't say whether that's true, whether those things really happened. But these cases overall are very convincing, actually. No reason to disbelieve that. But if it is true, that shows a kind of example where something has happened because of past karma. In this case, I can only assume, because of the brooding moroseness, sitting there for 2 days, staring, brooding about the lost wealth, and brooding about the pain and being attached. Obviously, if your body's in pain, we're very attached to our bodies, we don't like it. And he's looking down at the blood on his feet, and just from focusing on this and being obsessed with it, when he was reborn, there were these deformities. I just realised all that noise was me breathing into the microphone. So these deformities came about because of the actions, because of the actions of mind in this case, because of the brooding, because of the brooding on the, which hardly is surprising really, you've got nothing much else to look at apart from your feet for 2 days. This was fixed in the mind, the pain in the arms, this was fixed in the mind, and then when they were reborn, they had these deformities. So, but you wouldn't say that, oh, they had these deformities because of bad karma. They made some evil karma in the past, and that's why. Actually, they didn't do anything wrong at all. But in the sense of unskillfulness, it was unskillful. It's natural, and most of us would probably be annoyed if somebody did this to us, and be suffering at the pain. But because of the attachment, because of the focusing on this thing, the obsession with, this, with these thoughts, as a result, this is how they were reborn. There's a, taking one an example from the Buddhist tradition, again, I think it's from the commentaries rather than the Buddhist suttas, it talks of there was a case where a monk was obsessed with his robes, and monks do sometimes get obsessed with their robes. Having very few possessions, people tend to focus on what they do have. And this monk, he was, I don't know, he got a new robe or something, and he was, you know, really made up about this and really pleased and thinking about it all the time, but then happened to die for whatever reason at this point. And then because of the obsession, he was reborn as a flea living in these robes. Now, it's a kind of comical story, but, and may not be true actually, some of these commentarial stories are a bit dodgy, but it shows that the idea in the Buddhist tradition too, the idea that just that kind of act, just the kind of like being too attached to your robes and too kind of pleased about how fancy they look, leads to this kind of ridiculous birth as a flea living in the robes. So the idea of bad karma, you know, is broader than we might think. It's not just simply, it doesn't mean the same thing. You know, unskillful actions isn't the same thing as bad, you know, what we think of as bad karma. Also, the way that kind of illustrates the complexity of the way things happen, our karma works itself out. So we can't know. When things happen to us, you know, was this because I did something bad in the past? You don't know, and you can't know. And it's pointless trying to work it out. This isn't the purpose of the Buddha's teaching on karma, is for us to obsess about our past or our past lives. Why did this happen to me? Why me? Why me? I was in hospital recently, they thought I... It turned out not to be true. They thought I had... what was it called? Or a heart disease, whatever it's called. Clogged up arteries. And they got this video for me to watch about how to be healthy and look after your arteries. It turned out not to be the problem, actually. But the video was called "Why Me?" And when I saw it, I looked up and saw the title and I said, "Why me?" And the nurse looked around and said, "Oh, is that how you're feeling?" Yeah. And I said, "No, I was just what I said." But without trying to mock people, but it is a kind of ridiculous question, really. Why me? You know, I think it's Ajahn Brahm. I heard the story about some 90-year-old woman going to the doctors and being told she had cancer. I said, "Why me?" It's so unfair. Yeah. This is how we tend to react to the world. You know, why me? But it's actually it's not worth speculating about. Anyway, basically, because why did you? You know, why have you got cancer? Because you're a human being and you're 90 years old. You know, why did why do you get sick and die? Because that's what happens to everyone. Basically, it's not a mystery really. But anyway, in any case, speculating about the particular causes. I mean, to a certain extent, it's worth looking at. You know, why didn't I get heart disease? Maybe it's all that fatty food I eat, and so on and so forth. So it's useful to kind of speculate in those kind of ways. But to speculate about things which we have no way of answering, did I do something evil in the past life? Unless you can remember your past lives and stuff, you're never going to know. But all you do need to know is the practical aspect of the law of karma. And the practical aspect of the law of karma is if you do good, you'll get happy results. If you do bad, you'll get bad results. So that's the purpose of the Buddha teaching about karma. He actually said that the actual workings out are not only are they is it futile, but it's impossible to work out. As one of the Buddha said, there's the four things which he said it's impossible to actually see the workings out, because although the principles are very simple, the way the results come about is enormously complex. So for instance, as I said, we've all done good and bad, but when the Buddha said everything you do, good or bad, it will bear fruit eventually when the conditions are ripe. So it can't just doesn't just happen, ripen immediately. It's when the conditions are right. And that may not be for eons, for millions of lifetimes, or it may be 5 minutes later. And so we don't know when things will ripen from the past, and we don't know what we've done in the past, in previous lives. All we know is what we've done in this life. So we have no idea what will ripen. So that's one reason why it's just enormously complex. So you can, again, there's an example, again, I think from the commentaries, of some kind of murderer or bandit or something who was on the scaffold or whatever they had in those days in the Buddha's time, about to be executed. And he'd done a lot of many very bad things in his life. And then as he was about to be executed, he saw walking by a monk, Buddhist monk, or maybe perhaps some other religious person from a different tradition. And he remembered how in the past he'd given to these monks, you know, before he'd become completely a terrible rogue, or maybe even after he became a rogue. And it just brought a glad kind of feeling into the mind about something, you know, about this, just being reminded of good people and good acts he'd done. And then that moment they executed him. And because his mind was dwelling on the good he'd done, he was reborn in a heavenly world. So, bloodthirsty murderer, reborn in heaven. And sooner or later, he'll have to experience the results of the bad he did. But at the time, he was experiencing the results of the good he did, because of what happens as you're dying is actually very important for what happens next. Just as in any moment in our lives, the state of mind you're in now will condition the state, your next state of mind. So if you're in a bad, really, really angry, then more likely than not, 5 minutes' time, you'll at least be not very happy, or at least be annoyed, you know, even if your anger's calmed down. Things don't just switch over just like that. And I think in that case, because he was reborn in a heavenly realm and he was able to remember his past lives and he realised, oh my God, I was a murderer in my last life, and if I don't do some really good things now, I'm done for. So he, I don't know, he practised Buddhism and so forth. But it shows that that's one complexity. So just because you may have done bad doesn't mean the results will come immediately. Also, the Buddha said that not everyone will experience the results of the same action in the same way. So a person who doesn't do very much good at all, or whenever there's any, then even little things, the results will come back to them very, very strongly. Whereas somebody who does a lot of good, they can do the same kind of, this seems unfair, but they can do the same bad act, and actually they won't get such bad results. They will get some, but it will be much milder form. And the example he gave was an example of unfairness, actually. He gave an example of justice. He says, in court, two people might be tried for the same thing in court, and if one is an upstanding figure of the community and well-connected and so on and so forth, and then they'll get off fairly lightly. And another person is a bit of a rogue, no real friends from lower classes. They can do the same thing and get a stiffer sentence. Which is that's an example of injustice, but that is the way things tend to work. And the Buddha says, well, in the same way, somebody who does a lot of good and whose mind is good and exalted, the few bad things they do won't affect them so strongly. And in the same place, he used this other simile, which you may have heard about how karma can be diluted. He said another way of putting the same thing was, he said, if you have a glass of water and put a spoonful of salt in it, it makes the whole water salty, and you'll taste that salt very strongly. But if you put that into a huge basin or a lake or a river, that same spoonful of salt, mix it in, you won't be able to taste it. It will be negligible amount. In the same way, a person who's a very small-minded person, so to speak, or done very little good in their lives, any bad act, it will permeate their mind very strongly. Somebody who's done much, much good is like the large body of water. The same act won't taint the entire mind so much and won't come back to affect you so much. So the workings out are actually very, very complex. And as I said, the Buddha actually said it's impossible to actually know. Well, he's actually said it's impossible for anyone but a Buddha, I think he said, to know. A Buddha can see the workings of karma, and also, like the other things with like the possible realms of meditation and mind states one can visit. But to work them out through the intellect is impossible, and it's futile, and you only drive yourself mad trying to work it out. So don't bother. The important thing is to know the principles, because again, just like other laws of physics, just like gravity, actually, the idea that things clump together because of gravity is very simple, but the actual workings out are enormously complex. Even ignoring kind of more modern developments in physics and things with relativity and so forth, just the idea of Newton's laws, although they describe exactly how, say, bodies will interact, if you have as many as even, if you have more than two things acting on each other, so like in the solar system you've got 9 planets or 8 planets and the sun and all these other things, or in an atom you've got a number of elements whizzing around, a number of particles whizzing around, if there's more than two, then it becomes chaotic and you can't actually predict exactly what will happen. Even though the laws are deterministic and tell you exactly how things will interact, to actually work out what will happen in the future, you can only approximate. So they use computers to approximate where the planets will be and when the sun will rise and so forth. But if they try to do it a long time in the future, they can only guess. So this idea that just because the principles are simple doesn't mean that you can simply work out how things will happen. And karma works in the same way. It's a good, I think it's a good analogy, that although the workings of karma are simple in principle, we can't work out how things will turn out. So that isn't what we try to do. We just, rather than thinking about worrying about our past and, you know, why did I end up like this, we can't know that. And rather wondering what will happen to me in the future because of what I've done, we don't know. It's impossible to work out. But what we can do is use the law of karma as a guide in our lives now. And again, not to just believe it, you know, that it's true just on faith, but investigate. But if you investigate, you'll see that, you know, if you do things motivated by greed, aversion and delusion, then you'll suffer. And so we can use this law then to guide our actions. I think, okay, I'll try to base my actions on the wholesome roots instead. I was going to say at the beginning, I'll only talk for a while, and a short while, and then ask for questions, because I talk longer than I intended anyway. Generally anyway, I find people have a lot of questions. People do tend to be interested in karma and have a lot of kind of confusion. So now I'll kind of open it up if anyone wants to ask if there's anything they didn't understand about what I said or any other aspects about karma which people would like to ask about. So please, if there are any questions. Yes? Please ask away. Exactly the point. I mean, the important thing is how we deal with our present situation, not agonizing over why we ended up like this. So that's quite right. So the important thing in any situation is not to kind of think, oh, why me? But what shall I do? You know. Okay, just had a heart attack, maybe I should start exercising and eating better rather than like, why me? So yeah, generally speaking, it's how we respond to the situation is what we can do about it. That's very true. And that's the karma we make now, that's the most important thing. Yeah? As what?
Corrective karma.
Corrective, how do you mean? Oh, collective, I'm sorry. Well, purification, okay, well, first, the collective karma, no, basically, in group karma, in the sense, there's group karma, and if two people do the same thing, then they're doing it as a group, but each individual is responsible for their own actions. So the important thing about, again, as Buddha said it many times, I am the owner of my karma, and born of it, I'm related to it. It's mine. It's not anyone else's. No one else is responsible for what you do. You are responsible for it. So again, this is a good aspect of the teaching, because it's saying, you can take control of your life. You're responsible for your actions. And because your karma is what determines your happiness and suffering, so you can determine your own happiness and suffering in the future. You can make you can lead yourself to a better life or to a worse life. It's up to you. So again, this teaching throws it back on ourselves. A point of it is that, another aspect, the important reason the Buddha taught karma is that to say, why do things happen to me? Well, because of what we do. This is important thing. This is that we generate our own happiness and suffering. So rather than raiding against nature or against fate or asking who's to blame, just take responsibility for your own actions. So as for groups, if you're in a group, you're responsible for what you do. So say like global warming, everybody's responsible to a certain degree for what's happening. Not everybody's, but most of the people in this room are responsible for the kind of carbon dioxide going into the atmosphere and so forth, and global warming. Now, if you decide to try to have a carbon neutral life and so forth, and do all sorts, but everyone else carries on as normal, then the planet will still fry and will still be in trouble. But the important point is that you won't be to blame. So some things people say, what does it matter if I don't? They're talking about some kind of bad act, maybe nicking something or whatever it might be. It's like, well, if I don't do it, someone else will do it anyway. So what difference does it make? Well, the difference is that if they do it, they'll get the results of that karma. If you do it, you'll get the results. That's the difference. So if you live a pure life, you have a clear conscience. So likewise with the trying to lead an ethical life, not destroy the planet. Even if you do your best and everyone else screws things up, well, at least you will have a clear conscience, basically. And you won't suffer any more than you need to because of it. But as for the idea that a group karma, doesn't we each act individually and we get our own results individually. So even if a lot of people act together, they're again, because of their circumstances, and because of the types of person they are, they will get different results at different times, just depending. And the idea that when something happens to a group of people, it happens because of some group karma. And like, as I said earlier, this is kind of, it's not a Buddhist idea at all. The idea that everyone who's in a, if there's a fire in a building and everyone in there was killed because they all did some bad together. I mean, this isn't the case. They all got killed because they're all in the building together, basically. So the other thing you asked was the second thing?
Purification.
As for purification, our past, all the karma we do, we will have to experience the results. So we can't erase any bad karma we've done. But as I said, we can dilute it. But it's still there. So the best we can do is the more we lead a good life, then the smaller proportion of our what's in our minds, our stream of consciousness, is the bad, and the more is the good. So the more we're generous and helpful and kind people, then the less our bad karma will affect us. But we can't erase it. Is that what you meant? No, we're not doomed, because this idea that because we can make more karma, we're always making more karma, we can make good karma. we're not doomed because, as I said, the Buddha said the same thing can affect one person appallingly badly, another person, they just get very mild results of that thing because of the other things they do, like the salt in a large body of water. It will still have an effect, but it will be relatively negligible. And even the effect it has, again, you're not doomed because just because bad things happen to you, when they've worked themselves out, then the karma is finished with. So there's no eternal punishment or anything. Yeah? So like even the hell realms, the Buddha said there are hell realms, and from killing and so forth, you can even be reborn in bad places, and he says, even in hell. But it's not permanent, because there's only a limited efficacy of any action you do, and eventually it will wear itself out. But the same applies to our good actions. You can't do something and think, well, I'm sorted now because I've done enough good, I'm sorted, I'm going to heaven forever. Because, well, when that runs out, then you're going back down to the bottom again. It's like snakes and ladders. So the only thing to do is to completely get out of the game altogether, which you do through, not simply through good and bad karma. That's another topic, but you do through developing the Eightfold Path. Just good and bad karma will just send you up and down the snakes and ladders thing, but it doesn't actually in itself get you out. But it does set you up in a way so that it's easier then to do the work that gets you out. So it helps towards liberation, but in itself it won't liberate you. So being enormously generous, helpful, kind, loving, and so on and so forth, in themselves, won't lead to nirvana, to liberation. But also, equally, being really, really bad doesn't doom you forever. Okay? Any more? Is it time to wind up?
Okay, actually, John, I've got just one question too. I just thought I'll say it on the microphone so it goes onto the tape. But it's a timely talk because this week I had a question from a gentleman in the USA who is the guardian of a young boy who'd been abused. And his question was around the idea of how can he tell this boy or teach this boy to be able to accept his karma in a graceful way. I think he'd been sexually abused. And it might be nice if you could just talk around that.
Yeah, well, again, when you say accept his karma, if you mean karma in terms of actions, then, you know, then it's not necessarily the case that what happened to him is because of what he did. So again, what you really mean there is his situation. When you say accept his karma. So, as I say, karma is what you do. So it's really, that would be technically, to be pedantic, that would be the vipaka, the results. But even then, of course, we don't actually know that it, that what happens, everything that happens to us is because of something we've done. Yes, well, something like this. As the other gentleman said, I don't know how, in practice, to actually speak to people who've been, you know, suffered enormously. I had a friend who'd been sexually abused when he was a child. He'd been put in care and then abused. And he had, right up to his death, he had enormous anger, and it completely affected his life. He became a drug addict and ended up taking his own life. And it was all rooted in what had happened to him. All you can say, I mean, you can try to suggest to people, is as the man said, it's like, depending upon whatever ingredients we've been given, whatever cards we've been dealt in life, we can do is try to do the best with it. As for why, yeah, why me? Why did it happen like this? That's not a useful question to ask. It's just, well, it did happen like this. Life is unfair. Some people have an easy life. Some people have very, very hard lives. And to speculate on why is not useful. Also, to hold resentment and anger towards people who've done things to us is not useful. And again, that's an example of something we wouldn't consider bad. You know, it's not. Is it bad for a child to hate the person who sexually abused them? You know, it's not. You put someone down for behaving like this. It's quite natural, but it leads to more suffering. So I don't know what you'd say to a child. I have to admit, I don't know what I would say to a child in this situation myself. to someone, you know, to people generally, I just the advice is to forgive and to try to move on. But yeah, that's all I can think of saying.